Now we're holding on Kuf Dalad on Amud Aleph, the eighth line. The Mishnah had said, Lo Yitin Lo Livnoi Vlo Lishluchai. The Mishnah had described a case where a person stole money and then swore falsely that he doesn't own it. Later on, when he admits it and does tshuva and he wants to bring his korban, he wants to bring his korban ashram, where first he has to pay the keren b'chomesh to the person he stole it from. So the Mishnah said, lo yitin lo livnoi v'lo l'shluchai. He can't give the money to the nigzol's son or his shliach. He has to give it to him directly. So itmar, the Gemara says, we have a discussion of amiroyim on that point. Shliach shasoy be'edim. Suppose that a person, in general, not talking specifically about Zela yet, but in general, a person appointed a shliach in front of Eden. So Rashi describes, for example, that Shimon owes Reuven money, and Reuven now appointed a shliach to collect the money from Shimon. Rav Chista Omer, have a shliach, Rabba Omer loy have a shliach. Rav Chista says that is a valid shliach, and Rabba says not. A valid shliach, meaning Rashi says that way, so if Reuven's shliach comes to Shimon and collects the money, so now, at that point Shimon is potter from paying again because it was a valid shliach, and he gave the money to Reuven's shliach, and that's that. On the other hand, that's Rav Chista. Rabba is saying, no, it's not a valid shliach, meaning that Shimon is going to be on the hook to pay for it, again. Now Rashi just says that we're talking about over here that he appointed him with Edim, and the Gemara is saying he appointed him with Edim and sent him. Tosfos teaches out, according to Rashi, that it has to be that if Reuven had directly told Shimon, if Reuven had told Shimon, send it through this guy, then of course he's a shliach, because as the Gemara is going to quote soon, a case where he says, send it to me with Pliny, and that's considered a valid shlichus. So according to Rashi, it would come out that he didn't actually tell him, send it to me through him. There are edim that he's a shliach, but there's no actual instructions to send it through him, and therefore Tosfos explains that's how Rashi would understand the machlokas of whether if he gives it through that person, it's valid or not. Tosfos himself disagrees with that because it doesn't fit with the continuation of the Gemara, and so he says no matter what. Always shaloi b'fanav, it's no good whether there was actual instructions to send it, whether the shliach comes saying that he gave instructions to send it through me or not. It would have to, in order for him to be potter, according to everybody, it would have to be that Reuven actually told Shimon to his face, send me with Pliny. Send the money with Pliny. So in other words, if Reuven had previously told Shimon, tomorrow I'm going to be sending in person, tomorrow I'm going to be sending Levi to collect the debt from you, give it to him, then there's no question that would be valid. But although we're going to discuss in the Gemara later on about other possibilities of that, or other possibilities that maybe after all, even in that case, not. But right now, at least we're saying that for sure would be good. The question would be over here, if he appointed him with Edim. So again, according to Rashi, the vote is, he appointed him with Edim, and instructions that say, give it through him, whereas according to Tosfos, it doesn't matter whether he had said that or not. So we have sort of Chista versus Rabba. And the Gemara teaches out the reason behind the Machlokas. Rav Chista Omer Havi Shliach. Rav Chista says, it is a valid Shliach. Because he says, Lahochi Tauchi va'okma ve'edim, after all, we can say, why did he go to the trouble of appointing the shliach in front of Edim, because he wants that the money should be able to be in his reshus, meaning, in other words, that therefore, so he's saying that, the chistama have a shliach, lahochi tauchi va'okma ve'edim, the leiku birshusay, he wants that this way the money should be considered in his reshus. He went to the trouble of not just appointing a shliach, where there, you could say, okay, well, how do I know he's a shliach? I have edim to show that he's my shliach. So therefore, so I did that specifically because I want you to be comfortable sending the money with him and saying that, and know that you're going to be potter from having to pay further on. So therefore, so that's why Rav Chista is saying that's a valid shliach. Rabba omer loy have a shliach. Hochi kamar. Rabba says no. It still doesn't make him necessarily a shliach, in the sense that if he gives him the money and then there's an onus on the way, that he should be potter. Because hochi kamar, you can say the one who sent the shliach, the mishaleach, would say inish, the reason why I appointed him in front of Edim, inish mehemnehu, you should know he's a trustworthy person. Is samchas, if you want to rely on him, smoich, then you can rely on him and go ahead and send the money with him. But not necessarily saying that if there was an onus on the way, that you should be potter. The fact is, until the money reaches me, you can't really say that. Tosfos points out, by the way, that even if Shimon himself had brought the money, and he's traveling on a road where there's sakana, then there would be a certain degree of pshia over there, and he would be chayev. He'd have to make sure to give it to him in the city, or to give it in a way, or to tell Reuven, since there's a journey involved, and there's hazards on the way, and there might be an onus, and I don't want to be on the hook for it, then I'm going to wait to pay you until you come, or something to that effect. So therefore, in the same vein over here, when he's sending it with a shliach, Rabbi is saying, nevertheless, that's not enough to patter him from. It's not enough to patter him from paying. If there was an onus. So you want to send it with him because of the hate. But Reuven is saying, according to Rabbi, but he's saying, be aware though, and you should know he is trustworthy. There's no problem of giving it to him that he might keep it for himself or something. I appointed him in the presence of Edim, and I know that I can rely on him. But nevertheless, there still is the factor of pshia involved if there is an onus on the way, and therefore, in that sense, you're not guaranteed against that. So you'll have to decide. You'll have to decide yourself what you want to do at that point. So that's the machlokas. So the Gemara says Tanan. Now let's see. We learn in a Mishnah in Bava Metzia. If a person borrows a cow, and the owner of the cow sends it with his son, or he sends it with the son or the eved or the shliach of the shoyel, and it died on the way, potter. Then the shoyel is potter. Now, of course, a shoyel is chayev even for onsin. So when we say potter, amounts to saying that it's not yet in his reshus for him to be chayev according to the dinim of shoyel. So we have to ask, hay shloche hay chidomi. So what's the scenario with the shliach? Idolei osa be'edim. If we're talking about that he didn't appoint the shliach in front of edim, well, of course, minoya didn't. How would we even know that he's a shliach? If the Mishnah is calling him shluchai, implies that we know for a fact that he's a shliach, and without Edim, how exactly would we know that? Tosfos explains the question differently. Why would the mashil even give the cow to the person if he doesn't know for sure whether he's legitimately his shliach? Obviously, Ella da Osir Edim. Obviously, we have to be talking about that the shoyel actually appointed the shliach in the presence of Edim. Vikatoni, and still the Mishnah is saying de potter, that he will be potter if the animal dies on the way because it's not yet in his reshus. I skipped a line before, by the way, in Rabba's statement. We were saying, Hachakama, Inish Mehemno, he's a reliable person. If you want to rely on him. He borrows the Shadur Biyode, and if you want to send it in his hands, Shadur Biyode, then send it in his hands. So now we're saying, though, that in the case of the Shoyal, we're saying, on the face of it, we're saying that even though it is apparently a Shliach that was appointed with Edim, nevertheless, we're still saying that it's not yet in his Rishus. So Katani de Potter, and the Mishnah is saying that he's Potter, Kashal Rav Chista. So the question is on Rav Chista then. Rav Chista is saying that just the fact that you appointed him with Edim makes him a shliach. You don't need anything else. You don't need, as Tosfos said, explain Rashi to actually say, send it with him. You don't need according to Tosfos to actually personally tell him that point. And we're still saying, either way, we're saying that he's not considered his shliach. And therefore, if he gives the animal to him, or he's considered a shliach to the extent that, like Rabbah said, he says he's a trustworthy guy. You want to send the animal with him, gezunta hei. But nevertheless, it's not considered. We don't say in this shlucha shalom kamoisei, and to say that as soon as the shliach received the animal, then it's considered already as though it's in the shoyl's possession. Apparently, the Mishnah is not saying we don't say that. So then it's a contradiction on Rav Chista. And the answer is, kid omer Rav Chista b'sakhiro l'kitoi. The answer is, just like Rav Chista says, in connection with later on, the Gemara is going to point out that Rav Chista gives this answer in connection with to explain our Mishnah, which now we're bringing this in because this is going to be relevant to our Mishnah about the case of the Gazlan giving the money to Shluchai. We're going to have the same machlokas if it was a shliach that was appointed be'edim. So just like Rav Chista explains in connection with our Mishnah, that we're not just talking about a regular shliach, we're talking about b'sechiroi or l'kitoi. We're talking about his hired worker or his l'kitoi. Rashi gives two explanations. L'kitoi, number one, means a housemate. So l'kitoi, as in he gathered in this guy, and now he's living with him and keeping him company. And the second explanation, and elsewhere, Rashi explains that Lakitoi, Rashi explains that a second explanation is so that Lakitoi would be somebody who he hires to harvest and gather in his grain. So in other words, Sechiroi, so Rashi explains Lakitoi would be, according to the first explanation, which is from Rashi's Rebbeim, means his housemate. And Sechiroi then would be somebody who he hired for a period of time, a day, a week, or whatever. And Rashi's second explanation is Sechira, means one that you hired for other kinds of jobs, and Lakitoi would be like a seasonal worker that you hire him only for the season to harvest the grain. The point being, in other words, in both those cases, there was no actual appointment with Edom or something like that. It's just that the Mashal knows, he says, I know this guy, I know you, you're Pliny's housemate or you're Pliny's worker or whatever, so sure, I'll send the animal with you. Nonetheless, though, the fact is that the Shoyal did not actually appoint this Schiroi Lakitoi as a Shliach, and therefore we can say that he's Potter, therefore we can say that the animal is not yet in the possession of the Shoyal or of a Shliach when it dies, and therefore he's Potter. Not to say, though, Rav Chista would say, if he actually appointed him a Shliach with Edim, then not necessarily would the din of the Mishnah apply, because then we would say, as we said before, that he would say, I appointed him with Edim Davka in order that he should be considered my shliach, and therefore that it will be in my rishus, and in that case the result is, if it was that kind of shliach, then the shoyal would be chayev if the animal dies on the way. So no contradiction on Rav Chista. So Hochanami, the Schiro Lakitoi, so the same way as Rav Chista explains that in the case of our Mishnah, the same way he's going to explain the case in Bava Metzia as being just that, we're sort of talking about that he never actually appointed him a Shliach. He just, this is a person where we know that he's a hired worker or a housemate or whatever of the Shoyal. Okay, the Gemara says Tanan, let's look at our Mishnah then. Our Mishnah had said, Lo Yitin, Lo Levnoi, Velo Leshlochoi. Tosfos, by the way, wonders about the order of things in the Gemara over here. Why is the Gemara first presenting the question from Bava Metzia and only then from our Mishnah? And why is it saying, that Rav Chista had originally given his explanation on the Mishnah in Bava Metzia rather than Bava Kama comes before Bava Metzia? You would think that Rav Chista should have given his explanation on our Mishnah, and the Gemara should have brought our Mishnah in first to ask on Rav Chista. Anyway, Tanan, we learned in our Mishnah, Lo Yitin Lo Levnoi V'Lo Veshluchai. We said in our Mishnah that the Gazlan is not Yotze, the mitzvah, Beheshev Es Hagzela, and able to bring his Korban Asham. He can't give it, we said, to his son or to his Shliach. So, So again, we have to ask, what is the scenario with the shliach? Idloy asoy be'edim. Again, if he had not appointed him with edim, minoyadin, and how would we even know that he's a shliach, according to Rashi, or according to Tosfos, how would the Gazlan even rely on giving the money to him in order for it to be brought to the Nigzel, when he doesn't even know if this is the Nigzel shliach or not? You could just have a guy coming and saying, I'm his shliach, without any evidence at all, and you're not going to give him, you're not going to give him money on his own say-so. So, elolav da'asoy be'edim. Evidently, it must mean that he appointed him with edim. And if he appoints, and still, the Mishnah is saying that you can't send it with such a shliach. So that would imply, not like Rav Chisda, because Rav Chisda would be saying, once you appointed the shliach be'edim, then he's considered a full-fledged shliach, and anything that you give to him is considered like you gave to the Meshaleach. So the answer is, Tirgum Rav Chisda, B'schir Olokita. Again, Rav Chisda explained that our Mishnah is also talking about, when we say L'shluchoi, we mean Schir Olokita. We don't mean that he actually appointed him a Shliach. We mean that, he's known to be this guy's partner, or his housemate, or his whatever, his hired worker, but not that he actually, but not that the Mishaleach, not that the Nigzel actually appointed him. Well, the Gemara says, Abel Shliach Shasoy be'edim mai. So what are you going to tell me then? If he did actually appoint him in the presence of Edim, then what are you going to say? Hokinami to have a Shliach? You're going to say then he is considered a valid Shliach, and then the Gazlan can be Yotze Beheshev Esadzela by giving it to him. Well, well, then, in that case, why does the Sefer of the Mishnah continue and say that he could give the money to a Shliach Beistin if you're telling me that it's possible to have a Shliach that you can return to? Now, like this, in other words, the Mishnah seems to be saying there's no way to have a Shliach appointed by the Nigzel that the Gazlan can accomplish for Heshev Esegzela by returning it to him. The only way is going to be by a Shliach Beistin. But if that's the case, if according to Rav Chisda, it's enough to have the Nigzel appoint the Shliach Be'edim, and the case of the Mishnah saying that he can't return it with him is talking about a Shliach who wasn't appointed with Edim at all, but rather Schiro Lakitoi, where we know that he's his messenger, but he never actually appointed him officially as such. Well, literally the listening of the day. Then why did the Mishnah make a distinction within that itself? Shliach Shasoy Be'edim, Hochinami Da'av Shliach. And the Mishnah should have said, the Mishnah should have said that if he appoints him with Edim, then he is a valid Shliach. Instead of saying the distinction is a Shliach you can't give to, but a Shliach based in you could. Instead, the Mishnah should have said that a Shliach without Edim, such as Schiro Lokito, you can't give, but a Shliach with Edim, you could, because he'd be considered a valid Shliach. In fact, a Vos HaBach makes that more clear in the Lashon of the Gemara. The Mishnah should have said, "Bamedvar mamum b'shliach shaloi asoy be'edim." When are we talking about a shliach that he didn't appoint with edim? Avol shliach shasoy be'edim. But if it was a shliach who he made with edim, then it would be valid, and he could return it with him. And in fact, the Rashba points out there would be a very logical reason for the Mishnah to make that distinction, because after all, a beis din is harder to get than edim. First of all, you need three for a beis din; you need only two edim. Second of all, everybody, almost anybody can be an aide. Not very many people are qualified to be on a beis din. So then the Mishnah should have, instead of the Mishnah saying, in other words, that there's a more difficult case to find where you could have a shliach that you give to, namely, you have to have a shliach that was appointed by beis din. Instead, you could have a shliach that was appointed by the Nigzel in the presence of Edim, and appointed a chisid, that's considered a perfectly good shliach. So why does the Mishnah not mention that? And the answer is Amri. The answer is, they say, to answer Rav Chisda, loy psikoloi, because the Tana couldn't do that because it's not a definitive thing. Shliach based in loy shno asoy nigzol, v'loy shno asoy gazlon have a shliach. Therefore psikoloi, because when it comes to a shliach based in, it doesn't matter who appointed that shliach based in. It doesn't matter whether it's the Gazlan went to based in and said, look, I stole from this guy and I swore falsely, etc., and now I want to do tshuva. But the guy is far away and it would be dangerous to travel over there, or as we learned yesterday, the expenses of traveling there are going to be greater than the amount that I owe. So therefore, let me make you based in the shluchim, or let you based in appoint the shliach in my presence, and he'll have the job of accepting the money and bringing it to the nigzol, or whether the nigzol makes the shliach. Either way, a shliach based in is a shliach based in, and that's valid. Therefore, psikalei, therefore the Tana can say it as a definitive fact that a shliach based in, you're always yotze. Based on, now we talked about yesterday, how much of that is a takonas hachamim to make, because it's a takonas hashavim, to make it easier for him to do tshuva, and how much of it is, we did mention in the Gemara yesterday, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon had mentioned, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik had said about takana gdola, his skin of a great takana, that if the expenses of bringing it there is going to be greater than the actual amount to pay, then you bring it to Beis Din. So we discussed there is that, there can also be cases where even on a daraisa level it would be valid to bring it to him. Tosfos in fact pointed out over there, referred to our Gemara, and said that, it's not completely takanas hashavim. To a certain extent, it is even daraisa. What we're saying is that as far as achrayus haderech, once he gives it to the shliach Beis Din, then that's good enough, and he has his kapara. He doesn't have to wait until it reaches the nigzol. The takana is something else. The takana is saying that he can give it to, that he can actually just deposit it with a local Beis Din. In other words, the din daraisa would be you give it to a shliach Beis Din, and then at that point you're not worried about what's going to happen on the road, and the takana would be you don't even need that. You can just deposit it with the Beis Din. That's how Tosfos learns. Anyway, the point is that Rav Chisda is going to explain that again, shliach Beis Din, no matter what, whether the nigzol or the gazlan is the one who had Beis Din appoint him, either way, that's going to work. On the other hand, shliach shasoy the edin, when it comes to a shliach who was appointed by edin, to kiasoy nigzol who to have a shliach, asoy gazlan may have a shliach, there, it only works if the nigzol appointed him a shliach. It doesn't work if the gazlan appointed the shliach, because why should it? Why should the gazlan be able to appoint the shliach and get away with it? The fact is, he hasn't yet done the heshev esagzela. So yeah, and he doesn't have his kapara yet. He can't bring his ashram yet. Therefore, like psikalei, therefore the Tana couldn't say it as a definitive thing that a shliach that was appointed by Edim is going to be good, because it's going to depend who appointed the shliach. So Rav Chisda, in other words, is going to say that the Mishnah doesn't mention the concept of shliach shasoy be'edim, because that would make the Mishnah too wordy. You would have to explain that it means where the nigzol made him be'edim. But the Mishnah can mention shliach based in, because there's no difference over there whether the gazlan or the nigzol appointed him, and therefore the Mishnah can say that a shliach based in is good, but not to imply that a shliach with edim would also not be good. However, it has to be a shliach that was appointed with edim by the nigzol. That's how Rav Chisda would learn. Again, according to Rabbah, the whole thing is more straightforward. According to Rabbah, we would just say that a shliach appointed with edim is never good enough unless you have actual instructions to send the money with him, and here you don't have that. Okay, in which case, the Gemara points out, Ula puki mehai tana. In which case, if we understand the Mishnah this way, then the Tana of the Mishnah is coming to exclude the opinion, is coming to show that he disagrees with the opinion of the following Tanya, the Tanya of Shimon Elazarimah, Shliach based in Shasai, Nigzol Vloyasoi Gazlan, if the Shliach based in was appointed by the Nigzol, but not by the Gazlan, Oi Asoi Gazlan, Vesholach Allah, Venotel Shloimi Yodoi, or that the Gazlan appointed the Shliach based in, and then the Nigzol sent another Shliach, so now each of them has a Shliach, in other words, so now you have the Gazlan Ruvain went to Beis Din and had them appoint the Shliach, and then Shimon, the Nigzol, went and appointed his own shliach, and the Notel Shaloi Miyodoi, and the shliach of the Nigzol went and collected the money from the shliach of the Gazlan, Potter, then at that point, the Gazlan would be Potter. So we see Rav Shimon Elazar is saying that, it has to be that the Gazlan, it has to be that the Nigzol makes the Shliach Beis Din. He's saying clearly only if the Shliach Beis Din was made a Shliach by the Nigzol. Actually what it is he's saying that if the Gazlan makes the Shliach Beis Din, it's only going to work only when the money reaches the shliach of the nigzol. So that would be, in other words, so in other words, we would say if the Gazlan appointed a Shliach Beis Din and he gave it to, and the Shliach Beis Din himself, before he had a chance to bring the money to the Nigzel, it was lost or stolen or whatever, there was some kind of onus, then we would say the Gazlan of Shimon Elazar would say the Gazlan has still not been Yotze because it didn't reach the Nigzel or his Shliach. Only if the only once it reached the Nigzel or his Shliach, then that would be good. So now our Mishnah, the way that Rav Chista is understanding it, is coming to tell us not that. That the Mishnah is saying it doesn't matter who appointed the Shliach Beis Din. Once the money reaches the Shliach Beis Din, then he's good, and then he's potter. And then the Rosh explains, actually, first of all, the Rosh wonders a little bit. He says, what's the chiddush? Obviously, once the Nigzel Shliach has the money, then especially appointed a chista, that's enough to appoint the Shliach Be'edim, then he should be potter. But the Rosh further points out that when you give it to a shliach of the Nigzel, if the Nigzel didn't actually appoint that shliach, then how is it going to work? How is there a kapara? So he explains that shliach Beis Din means, in other words, the Nigzel appointed the shliach Beis Din, the shliach in front of Beis Din. So the question is that appointed of Chista, why does he need to do that when he could have just done it in front of Eidim? But now we're saying, in other words, that the Mishnah is telling us that it disagrees with Rav Shimon Elazar and says that you don't need that. As long as he appointed the shliach with Eidim, then that will be good enough and it doesn't have to be appointed in front of Beis Din. Okay, the Gemara continues. Rav Yochanan and Rav Elazar. So we have this machloikas of Rav Chista and Rabba about a shliach shasoy be'edim. So now the Gemara brings other opinions on the subject. Rav Yochanan and Rav Elazar, the Amitavayu, both Rav Yochanan and Rav Elazar say shliach shasoy be'edim have a shliach. When you appoint a shliach with edim, it is a valid shliach. Meaning, in other words, like Rav Chista had said, once the shliach receives the money, then you, the loiva, or the gazlan or whatever it is, are potter, and you don't need to worry about it any further. And the flip side of it is, as far as what we said before, as far as a shoyo, that if you appoint a shliach be'edim, then as soon as the animal or whatever it is that you're borrowing reaches your shliach, then you're going to be chayev in all the things that a shoyo was chayev in. And Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar say, in terms of Mishnah Seinu, you're going to ask, what about our Mishnah? As, in fact, we asked on Rav Chista from our Mishnah before, that our Mishnah seems to be saying that you can't send it with a shliach. So before, Rav Chista had given an answer that the shliach of our Mishnah is Chiroi Lakita, is somebody who was never appointed officially as a shliach in the first place. It's just somebody who you know has a close connection with this guy as his hired worker or his housemate or whatever. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar give a different answer. The answer is b'mamtzi lo shliach. We're talking about where he makes a shliach, where he makes a shliach available to him. So he did appoint him with edim de'omalei isli zuzi gavit planya. Namely, that the Nigzel says to the Shliach, look, I have money that Ploni owes me because he stole from me previously. V'loi kama shadr lahu, and he's not sending them because he's concerned about what might happen on the way, that he doesn't want to be on the hook for it again. So I want you, ischazile, go appear in front of him, go meet up with him. So I don't know, he's not sending. I don't know why he's not sending yet. I know he wants to do tshuva, but I don't know yet why he's not sending. So you go and show yourself to him. You go and appear in front of him and find out. Maybe Poshut couldn't find somebody to send the money with. And now when you tell him, I'm available to send it, then he'll say, good, then I'll send it with you. But therefore, we're talking about that he didn't actually appoint him a shliach in front of Eidim. Inami k'dir Rav Chista b'schiru l'kitay. Or we could explain the way Rav Chista did, that we're talking about schiru l'kitay. Either way, in other words, we are talking about, say, Rav Yochanan and Rav Elazar, that we're not talking about a shliach who was appointed in the presence of Eidim, because if it was appointed in the presence of Eidim, then it would, in fact, be valid for the Gazlan to send the money through such a shliach, and he would be potter. And at that point, we would say that he has his kapara, and now he can bring his asham, So because Rav Yochanan and Rav Elazar are agreeing with Rav Chista on that point, and they're saying that you can't, that the Mishnah is not a contradiction to that again, because either it's talking about Sechir or Lekidai, or because we're talking about another case where, again, he didn't actually say to him in so many words, where he didn't actually say in front of Adam, you be my shliach. He's just telling him, you go and meet up with the guy and find out whether he's willing to send the money with you. Okay. Talking further about sending money with a shliach, the Gemara continues, Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, Ein Meshalchin Mois B'diyukni. You don't have to send money where a shliach comes with a diyukni. A diyukni, Rashi explains, is that for example, let's say with the Kodin, the owner of the money sent simonim, or for example, he signed a piece of paper and told him that you're going to be my shliach to go collect the money. Now there is something called a harshah, which we learned about earlier in the Masechta. We learned on Daf Ayin about the concept of a harshah, which is that he can write out an official document that says that I'm appointing you not more than my shliach. I'm making that this money actually belongs to you. He tells him, dun schei la'atzmacha, go take the guy to Beis Din if necessary and collect the money and it'll be yours. And that gives him the right to do that, the power of attorney, and then based on that, he has the right to now that he's considered the actual owner of the money, then of course he can go and collect and go to Beis Din and do everything else that's possible. Here we're talking about there's not an actual harshah. Here we're talking about he just gave him a piece of paper with a signature or a stamp or something that says go to Pliny and have him give me this money to you. The word diukni itself we find in a number of places in Midrashim. It means an image. It means an image, actually. Sometimes in particular it talks about that a person, for example, a human being, is the diukan, is the image of Hashem, because a person is created with Tzelem Elokim. So basically, the basic meaning is, the Rosh explains that the basic meaning of diukni is an image, and because the human form is the highest possible image that exists in our world, therefore the Midrashim and Gemara sometimes use the word diukni to mean a human form. The Kruvim doesn't say the word diukni by them, as far as I know, but whatever. Yeah. The Rabbeinu Hanan also in Shittim Kobetzis brings a different meaning of it. That the word diukni, the word diu, means true. So it means like a mutual secret, like some secret that only the two of them know. So now a person comes. So again, Reuven, let's say, previously deposited money by Shimon. Now he's sending Levi together with a diukni to say, go pick up the cotton from Shimon. So we're saying that Shimon is not obligated to give the money to this shliach. Ba'afilu edim chasumim aleihu, even if there were edim signed below the signature or below the stamp. The reason is because basically the problem is he still has a chrayus on it. Since this guy was not appointed a shliach bifnei edim, then therefore. If he sends the money with him, very well, he can trust that this guy was sent by Reuven. But what happens if there's an onus on the way? Reuven's going to say, I never received the money. Then Shimon is going to be on the hook to pay it all over again. And he doesn't want to do that. Therefore, he doesn't send the money with this person who's carrying the duke. Tosfos discusses a couple of possibilities over here. It means an image or a stamp or a seal or something like that. Something where we know he's been sent by a certain person, but nevertheless, there's no actual instructions. Say there's no actual instructions in so many words saying that he's appointed, right? So even if there's edim certifying that this is his diukni, so in other words, Tosfos first mentions that we're talking about, so Reuven told a sofer, write out a document that says to Pliny, that says to Shimon, he should send the money through Levi and sign with his stamp, then even if there are edim on it, Tosfos explains, edim chasumim aleha means that the edim are certifying that this is in fact Reuven's stamp. So they're not certifying the actual instructions that Reuven gives. They're not saying, in our presence, Reuven gave these instructions. They're just saying, we recognize that this is Reuven's stamp. So that's not good enough. Tosfa says, if the document, if they sign on the actual statement in the document, then yeah, sure, that would be different. Then he would be a valid shliach, because we said before he was appointed a shliach by Aiden. And again, Tosfos also says that based on what they had said on Amud Aleph, that even with all of that, if he didn't actually tell him in person, give me the money through Pliny, then not necessarily, then still he's going to have the problem of Achrayus, and therefore he's entitled to say, I'm not going to send it. So that was Rabbi Yehuda said that in the name of Shmuel. Rabbi Yochanan says no. If Edom chasumim aleha, if Edom are signed on it, Meshalchin, then you do have to send them, because now at that point he's potter from Achrayus. Because again, for the same reason as we said on Amar Aleph, because he went to the trouble of appointing these Edom, appointing the shliach in the presence of Edom. So that's good enough. That means he's his actual shliach. Shmucha shalom k'moisei. And now at that point, if the money reaches him, then it's considered as though it reached the mishaleach, and therefore Shimon will be potter. Shimon, the shomer or whatever he was, will be potter from Achrayus, and therefore there's no reason that he shouldn't send it.
Escort without him being.
Yeah. So Rabbi Yochanan is saying, as long as there are edim that are signed on it, then that's good enough. Not like Shmuel says. So Tosfos points out, in fact, you don't even need a diukni. We said before, the shliach shasoy be'edim is good enough. The chiddush is, we were saying that if there's a diukni without edim, then it won't be effective. I may recognize it as Pliny's signature or his stamp or whatever, but nevertheless, I still have the problem of achrayus, and therefore I'm entitled to say I'm not going to return it just on the basis of this diukni, unless you come and tell me that you have, unless you come and show me evidence of edim that you've actually been appointed of a shliach.
Signature. There's no
doubt. Essentially, that's kind of what it comes down to. Yeah. So Tosfos, by the way, mentions over here that was given that we have that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar apparently both agree with. Now usually we have the halacha is like Shmuel and Dinim Amonis. Tosfos points out when we have Rav versus Rabbi Yochanan, usually the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, and that means and Rav is a. So Tosfos says in that case the same rule would apply when you have Shmuel against Rabbi Yochanan. The halacha would have to be like Rabbi Yochanan, especially over here. Tosfos says the halacha must end up being like Rav Chista in the original Machlokas, not like Rabba, because both Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar agree with Rav Chista, and because just like Rabbi Yochanan outranks Rab as far as the halacha being like him, so also he must outrank Shmuel in the halacha being like him. So therefore, the halacha would end up being that as long as he was appointed with Edim, then it would be valid. On the other hand, other Rishonim learn that the halacha is like Shmuel. The halacha usually is like Shmuel and Dinim Amonis, that says that no, in that case not. When there's a diukni over there and there are Edim, that's not necessarily good enough. You would have to have, as Tosfos says, either they actually sign off on the actual statement to give him the money, not just that they're signing off that the diukni itself is valid, that the diukni itself is genuine, or as the Gemara is going to point out, you have to have other, according to Shmuel, you're going to have other ways of accomplishing the matter. So the Gemara says, so they ask Shmuel, my takanta. Well, according to Shmuel, how do you correct the situation? Given that, so if you're out of town, and according to Shmuel, it's not good enough to send a shliach even with a diukni, and even with edim, and even with all of that. So how is a person supposed to get his pikadon if he's out of town? According to Rashi and according to one explanation of Tosfos, what we're saying is that, yeah, you could appoint the shliach in front of Edim, and that'll work, because we said Rav Chista holds, and Shmuel evidently agrees with that, that as long as you appointed the shliach in front of Edim, then you're good. But the Gemara wants to say, the Gemara wants to give an answer that will work even if the shliach passes away beforehand, and therefore the Gemara is going to ask how you're going to accomplish that. There's other explanations as well. First of all, according to the second explanation in Tosfos, we're saying that as long as he didn't tell him in person previously send me the money through Pliny, then it's not going to work. So the question is, now what if you don't have the opportunity to? You're out of town, and you don't have the opportunity to tell him in person. So how are you going to do it in a way where the guy is going to be able to send it and know that he's potter? The Pnei Yeshua talks about another possibility as well, that the Gemara may also be factoring into the consideration that, after all, the Mishaleach could always be Mevatel, the Shliach. He could say, for example, that this guy is not my Shliach anymore, and then it's going to turn out you gave him the money, and it turns out by that time he wasn't the Shliach anymore. So the Gemara is looking for a way that you can be guaranteed that you can give the money and not have to worry about any of those considerations. And the Gemara answers, Kiha, as we have the following case. Dirab Abba have a Masik Zuzi, but Dirab Yosef Bachom. Rab Abba was owed money by Rab Yosef Bar Chama. Rab Yosef Bar Chama is the father of Rab. So he owed Rab Abba money. Omalei, Rab Safra. So Rab Abba tells Rab Safra, who's going to be traveling to Rab Yosef, Rab Chama's area. This is not, by the way, Rab Yosef Bar Chama is not, Rab Yosef Bar Chama is not the regular Rab Yosef in Shas, who was Rav's Rebbe. This is Rav's father. Anyway, so Rav Abba says to Rav Safra, Bahadi de Osis, while you're traveling to where Rav Yosef Bachama lives, I sinu ni ali, go bring the money that Rav Yosef Bachama owes me, bring it along with me. So he's making Rav Safra his shliach. Ki ozo lahosam. So when Rav Safra goes, so ki ozo lahosam, omale rova brei. So Rav Safra comes and says, Rav Abba sent me to get the money. Rava, Rav Yosef's son, asks him, this is a regular Rav Yosef and Chas, me kosavlach his kabalti, in this document that Rav Abba wrote to give to Rav Safra, did he say in there the word hiskabalti, that when Rav Safra gets the money, it's considered that I myself have received it? And then that way you'll be potter from achrayus in case it gets stolen or whatever on the way before Rav Safra has a chance to bring it to Rav Abba. Omalei lois, Rav Yosef Bachama says no. So Rav says yihachi. Well, then we have a problem over here. You shouldn't have to give the money to him because then you're going to be under achrayus. Zil bereisha. What you should do, he said to Rav Safra, go first to Rav Abba and make sure that he writes in the document the word iskabalti. And then that way you'll be able to collect from my father. Cause then that way he'll know, that way my father of Yosef will know that once he gives you the money, then he's put of Machrayos, and then he'll be more comfortable bringing the money. So again, this is the case. It's not that he doubts that Rav Safra is Rav Abba's Shliach, but there's the problem of Achrayos on the road. So he's telling him, I'm sorry, your document that you brought from Rav Abba is not good enough for us to be able to rely on that we can give you the money and know that we're not going to be on the hook for it again. So you have to get another document. Well, so L'soif Omalei, afterwards, actually Rava tells him, and L'soif doesn't have to mean that he actually went back and came with another document. It could be as they were continuing to discuss the matter. Omalei, Rava says, actually, Ikosav Lachnami Iskabalti Lav Tumhu. Actually, even if he writes Iskabalti, that really is not going to help. Dilma ad osis shochav Rav Abba. Because the problem is, by the time you return, what's going to happen? You're going to go back to Rav Abba. He'll give you a new document that says you collect the money from Rav Yosef and Skabalti, and it'll be considered once you receive the money as though I, Rav Abba, received it. The problem is, says Robert to Rav Safra, the problem is, by the time you come back here, shochav Rav Abba, it's possible that Rav Abba might pass away. Rav Abba at this point was old, so he might pass away. So he might pass away at some point. And then his shluchus is bottled. The Nafli Zuzi Kami Yasni, the result is that now the Yisoimim are going to inherit his estate, and his Hiskabalti is not going to be effective. The Yisoimim are going to go demand it. They're going to say, if there was an onus on the way, they're going to say, the Hiskabalti did Abba Lav Plumu. They're going to say, the fact that our father wrote Hiskabalti doesn't help. The fact is that by the time you presented that document, Rav Abba was no longer living. So therefore, his Hiskabalti is not effective anymore. Hiskabalti would mean that I, Rav Abba, am saying as soon as the money reaches Rav Safra, it's considered to reach me. That only works if Rav Abba is still alive.
Yeah, but he doesn't go back.
No, the point is, Rava is saying, So now, on Sunday you're gonna go to Rav Abba and he's gonna give you a document that says it's Kabbalti. On Monday you're gonna come over here and you're gonna present that document. And if Rav Abba is still alive on Monday, then excellent. It means we give you the money, and it means at that point we're potter from any further achrayas because it's considered that it reached Rav Abba. But what happens if after he gave you the document on Sunday, what happens if Rav Abba passed away? Now, when you come on Monday with a document that says it's Kabbalti, what is Kabbalti? There's nobody to be Makabal because Rav Abba passed away and the Yisraelim are not bound by that it's Kabbalti. So if you take the money and you go to bring it back to Rav Abba, not knowing yet, of course, that he passed away, and there's an onus on the way, then the Yisraelim are going to say, wait, we were never paid back. So then you know we're going to need to pay again. We don't want that. So therefore, it's not going to work. Now,
what he writes is doesn't have any.
The point is that he's writing his Kabbalti, and that's not good enough. You can't. Until he actually receives it, right? Right. Or his shliach receives it, but only when he's alive, right? There was a bit of discussion about that. The Gemara does mention in Gittin that usually we're not choshesh lemissa, at least not in the short term like that. So then Mukha Yosef points out that look, I mean, we're trying to figure out something that'll be airtight. So therefore we do have to consider that it may be a remote possibility, but it still exists. And therefore Rava still wants to take that into consideration. Yeah, especially since Rav Abba was old, and then, in fact, Rava himself explains there in Gittin that if the Mishaleach is over 80, then we are Choshesh L'Misa, and so we could say that Rav Abba over here was over 80. Anyway, though, the Yamshal Shlema, the Marshal, gives a different answer. When it comes to Isser Beheter, we're not Choshesh L'Misa. The case there in Gittin is involving sending a Shliach to receive a get, or to give a get. To give a get, but here we're talking about dinim momentous, and you can say that, look, it may be a remote possibility, but there still is a possibility, and I want to be insured against that. Okay. So in short, Rava tells Rav Abba, doesn't really matter whether your document says it's Kabbalti, either way, it's not going to work. So El Omalei ve'Elamai Takanta. So Rav Abba says to Rava, well, then what should I do? How do I collect the money to give to Rav Abba? So Rava tells him Zil Niknir Loch Agav Karta. What you should do is that Rav Abba should be makna you the coin that should be makna to you the money agav karka. We learned about in Kedushin about kinyan agav that when you coin a karka along with it you can be coin a metalplin. So the same way, and we talked about over there, the metalplin don't necessarily have to be on the actual karka. So therefore, have Rav Abba be makna you some karka and together with it be makna the money. And therefore, now it's considered your money. And now, when we give it to you, we'll be potter from achrayos, and it won't matter at that point whether Rav Abba is still alive when we give you the money or not.
The karka has to be where he's received the money from.
No, the karka can be anywhere, as we're going to talk about in a second. And then, the ta'at, soiv lon, is kabalti. Now, the next thing is, then, so he needs to do your kinyan agav. Then you come and write us out a document that says that once we give you the money, I receive the money. And that way, in other words, now we're potter from any further achrayos, and then we can give you the money. So that way we've covered all our bases. So that answers the question before. The Gemara was asking, according to Shmuel, where we say, Ein Meshalchen Mos V'diyukni, so the answer would be, we have to do like that. We have to have Kinyan Agav, and we have to have something that says Iskabati. And we have another example, the Gemara says, Ki Hodir a Papa have a Masik Tresa Alpizuzi Beichoizoi. There was a case where the Papa was owed 12,000 zuz by people in Beit Hozoi. Beit Hozoi is an area nowadays part of Iran. It's the area of Iran near the Persian Gulf where a lot of the oil wells are. So these guys owed Rav Papa a lot of money. Akninu Ninale Rav Shmuel Ba'Abba Agav Asefa DeBeisi. So he was machna that money to Rav Shmuel Ba'Abba Agav the safer of his house. Rashi gives two explanations. Safer can mean like the word saf in Lashon Kodesh, meaning the threshold, and that's karka, because the threshold's attached to the ground. So he's mapping the threshold of his house, and together with that, the money. Or the second possibility, Rashi says is that safer can mean like a corner of his house. Whatever the case, he's mapping him karka, and together with it, the metalblim, and ki osa, and when Rav Shmuel came back with the money, Rav Papa was so happy to see him, nofak la'afe ab tavach, he went out to meet him as far as Tavach, which is the name of a place. This Gemara story is also told in Bava Basra, the Rashbam there explains another possibility that Tavach means the middle of the way. So he went all the way, halfway from where he lived, to half the distance from where he lived to Beit Chazoi, to meet up with Rav Shmuel bar Abba as soon as possible, because he was happy to have gotten the money, figuring that there's such a large amount of money and so difficult to travel, and still he got it. So yeah, there is quite a lot of discussion about that. There was quite a lot of discussion about that, because the question is that how can you be makna a choiv where the money doesn't necessarily exist now? After all, milva loitzah nitna. It's one thing if it was a pekodin or something where the money actually has to still be intact in their hands. You can do that. But here we're talking about a choiv. How can you be makna something that may not exist at that time? So even Kenyan Agav. How would that help? So there's a lot of discussion about that. In fact, Tosfos elsewhere discusses that the girsa may not be that have a masik, meaning that he was owed money, but rather have a gabe or something like that, which means, in other words, that he had been mafkid this money by them. So then in that case, the cotton, there's no problem doing Kenyan Agav. And then there's various other possibilities that Tosfos discusses in different places that maybe in fact the Chachamim did make a takana to say that even with a milva, you could do that. You don't necessarily, usually we say to transfer a milva from one person to another, usually you need what's called maimad shloshtam, that the three of them are standing together, and you say, this milva that you owe me, instead give it to Pliny. But here we're saying that maybe the Chachamim also made it possible to do it through Kinyan Agav. Okay, the point is, in other words, that we have an example of that you use Kinyan Agav in order to be able to collect. So the same way Rava is telling Rav Safra, if you wanted to collect, and we want to be guaranteed against any problems of achrayus on the road, then we have to do it that way, involving that Rav Abba is going to be makni you the money agav with Kenyan agav. And by the way, that's the only way to do it. We can't do, for example, chalifin, because the Gemara talks about in Bava Metzia, you can't acquire money with chalifin. You can't use a Kenyan chalifin to transfer money from one person to another. Metalpin, yes, but not money. Yeah. Okay. So again, you have Tosfos discusses that the halacha would have to be like Rabbi Yochanan saying that even with a diukni, as long as there are edim, you could send it, and therefore that would mean that this whole discussion that we just said would not be a libur dehilchasa. On the other hand, Shulchan Aruch brings not like that. It brings all these dinim over here that you need kinyan agav, and that you have the concern that he might die, etc., and therefore you have this whole thing that we're talking about in order. That's the only valid way to require the shomer or the gazlan or whatever it is to return the money and be guaranteed that he's not going to have to repay it again. Okay. The Mishnah had said, Nosim Ma'is HaKeren B'chola. We said in the way, the Gaonim, by the way, point out another point when it says that Rav Papa went all the way to Tavach in order to meet him. One point is he wanted to preempt that Rav Shmuel Ba'aba is going to come back and actually take possession of the poet of his house that he was makmit to him. if Rav Shmuel Ba'aba gets all the way to Rav Papa's hometown, then he's going to actually be able to be machzik in that threshold or in that corner of the house, and then how is Rav Papa going to get it back? So therefore, that's why he wanted to go meet him on the road in order that he can't do that. That way he can get the money from him and say, now you transfer back to me the part of my house that I was makna to you, and that way if you're willing to, but fine, he's yeah. Okay.
The same way that you worry about that, you could say, I'm not giving you back your
account. No, well, okay. No, it's not a matter of trust, but the fact is he could be masik in it, and then her papa has to pay him money or something in order to get it back. So like this, he preempts that. Okay. The Mishnah said, Nosim Ma'is HaKeren B'chola. We have the case in the Mishnah where the Gazlan paid the Keren, but not the Choymesh. So we said Ainet Sorech Leilach Achrov. So we said he doesn't have to go travel. He doesn't have to go follow the guy all the way to Modai to return the Choymesh. It's enough. He was Yotze at that point. He still has to pay the Choymesh eventually, but he's Yotze at that point and he can bring his Keren. So the Gemara says, Amach Choymesh Mamoinahu. Now, the point, though, is the Chomesh apparently is considered Mamon rather than Kapara. If it was Kapara, then obviously, if it was just for Kapara, then obviously not giving it wouldn't prevent him from bringing the Oshem. It must be, in other words, since the Mishnah is saying he doesn't have to follow him, implying, but it is considered a Choyv of Mamon. It's not just considered a matter of Kapara. And therefore, that means the Imayis. So therefore, the implication is that if he dies before he has a chance to pay the Chomesh, Mishami Le Yoshin, then the Yoshim are going to have to pay the Chomesh. If it was Kapara, then we say, Ain Kapara La Mason. Mason do not need that kind of Kapara, therefore they wouldn't be on the hook to pay the Chomesh. But since we're saying, since apparently the Mishnah is implying that the Chomesh is considered Mammon, then they would be, required to pay that like any other Chov of Mammon that their father owed. And in fact, we learn also, the Mishnah had also said, a later Mishnah in our paddock says, we said if he paid the keren and then swore falsely that he had paid the chomesh, and now he's ready to do tshuva for that, then we said, having most of chomesh al chomesh, then he has to add another chomesh to the original chomesh, like we talked about before. You could have, for example, originally he owed, let's say $50, and he swore falsely about it. So now he's chayav keren. Now he's chayav, let's say, for example, $60, in order that we don't have to deal too much with fractions. So $60, let's say. So now he has to pay keren b'chomesh, which means he has to pay an extra 15, total 75. And now if he denies, if he pays the 60 and claims that he paid the 15 and swore on it falsely, eventually he's going to have to pay that 15 plus a chomesh of that 15, which is going to be, we still do have to use fractions, whatever. The point is, he's going to have to pay a chomesh on top of that original chomesh. So we see that the chomesh is considered mammon. If it was considered kapara, then that wouldn't be necessary. So we see also al machum shemamono. We see from that also that the chomesh is mammon. The tanya nami hafi. Furthermore, we learn in a brisa, had gozels chaveir of nishbal over mess. If a person steals from somebody else and then and swears falsely that he returned it or he didn't steal or whatever, and then he died, Yoshim Mashalman Keren Rachemish, the Yoshim have to pay the Keren and the Chemish up to him in an Oshem. But they're parted from the Oshem because again, in Kapara Lameisim. The question is, the Yoshim B'nei Shalom is Chum Shagavu and Havu. Are you telling me then that the Yoshim do have to pay the Chomesh for their father? Alma Chomesh Mamonu Huvoi Shalom Yoshin, meaning that we're saying that the Chomesh is considered Mammon and the Yoshin should have to pay. This is in parenthesis. The Marshal takes it out because it seems kind of repetitive. It's basically restating what it said in the previous line. So it could be it was originally different Gersois, which accidentally got merged together, whatever. Anyway, Uramin. The problem is, the Gemara says I have a contradiction on that from a Braisa. The Braisa says, the beginning of the Braisa, it comes actually says from Toras Koinim, which is the Medrash Halacha and Vayikra. The Pasuk says, Asher Gozal, the Pasuk says, Beheshev Esegzela Asher Gozal, and from those words, Asher Gozal, we learn that a person has to pay a Chomesh only for his own Gzela, not for his father's Gzela. And then the Braisa continues, Adayin ani Omer, still you would think, only when neither he nor his father swore, then you would say, then the Yoshima potter from the Chomesh. Now, of course, in that case, there really is no Chomesh anyway, but the point is, the Rashba says, fine, but we're saying that there are other cases where you'd be chayiv a Chomesh, but you'd say, only in this case, where the Chomesh is not applicable at all, then you would say that they're not paying the Chomesh. What about if the Yodesh swore falsely about it and the father had not, or the other way around, the father had sworn falsely and the Yodesh did not, or both of them swore falsely? Minayin, how do we know that in all those cases the son does not pay the Chomesh? Tamad Loimar, Asher Gozal, Vasher Oshak. The Pasuk therefore says that he stole or that he held back. Who like Gozal like Oshak? The fact is, the son neither was Gozal nor was Oshak. He's swearing falsely that his father had paid it, but nevertheless, he wasn't the original Gazlan, he wasn't the original Oshak, and therefore he's always potter for paying the Chomesh. So the Braisa is saying that the son never pays the Chomesh, and here we're saying the implication from our Mishnah, and from the implication from two parts of our Mishnah, as well as the Braisa, is that he does pay the Chomesh. when his father stole.
Again, it's just money that he stole.
Doesn't matter. Therefore, they're paying the keren, but they're not paying the chomish. In other words, apparently the chomish is a matter of kapara. And once the gazlan is dead, then ain't kapara the mason. That's the question, yeah. The difference would be we're talking about whether the father admitted before he died that he had sworn falsely. So now at that point he becomes chayiv in the chomish. The second braisa is talking about where he never even admitted about it, and therefore that even if later on the yoshim admit that their father stole, then they still don't have to pay the chomish. The Gemara asks, "Eloi Hoda, Kenan Nami LeMishalim." Wait, if the father never admitted to it, then there's no keren to be paid either. How do we even know that the father stole? And the Rashba points out, can't be that there were edim, because we're talking about the chomesh implies that the whole thing we only know based on his own say so. There's no chomesh when there are edim, only when he himself is moida. But if
when you moida yourself, you don't have to pay him.
No, that when he's moida himself, when he swore falsely, and now he's moida that it was actually a false shvua and he had in fact stolen, that is where the Torah says he has to pay the chomesh. But if we're talking about he swore falsely and we never found out that it was actually false, he was never moida, then what payment are we talking about anyway? He swore that he didn't steal it. There's no hadar, so how are we talking about a keren anyway? And you're going to say maybe in fact yes, maybe that is what the braisa is implying, that in that case the son is not paying anything at all. That it doesn't just mean that he's not paying the chomesh, means he's not paying anything at all. No, given that the Tanna is trying to find a pasuk to show that he's potter from the chomesh, because it says Hashem Gozel, and he's not the one who stole, the memory of the keren mishalim. The implication is the son would have to pay the keren. So we're talking about a case where he pays the keren, so it can't be where the father wasn't moida, has to be where the father was moida. In that case, then, how do we reconcile this last braisa with the Mishnah and the other braisa that says that the son does pay the chomesh? But oi, Tanya, furthermore, that same braisa continues. Va'adayin ani oimer, still you might, without the pasuk telling us, you might think, Amos ha'el mishalim keren al gezel aviv, when is he paying the keren for his father's gzela, v'zmanchen nishba huva aviv? Only when he swore and his father had previously sworn, then he would have to pay. But aviv lehu, who like aviv lehu, like aviv. But if only his father had sworn falsely, but not the yodish, or the yodish but not the father, lehu like aviv, or neither the yodish nor the father, minayin? How would we know that even then the son has to pay the keren? Talmud lema gzela v'oshek avedo pikadin yesh talmud. Therefore, the pasuk mentions Zela and Oshik, where he held back wages of a worker, and Aveda, where he found a lost object and falsely claimed that he hadn't found it, or that he returned it, and Pikadin, and the Braisa finishes off, Yesh Talmud. Now, what does that mean? The Gemara first explains, what does this word Yesh Talmud mean? And then we're going to get back to explaining how we reconcile the various braises. The point is, the braise, though, is clearly saying that the son has to pay a keren regardless. So that can't be that we're talking about whether the father was moida or not, because again, if he's not moida, then there's no keren to talk about. So what is this yesh Talmud? The Yosef Rav Huna Ka'omala Hoshmaita, Rav Huna was sitting and saying over this braisa, Omale Rabba Bray, so Rabba, the son of Rav Huna, asks, what is that last word? Yesh Talmud Ka'omamar is the word Yesh Talmud, meaning, in other words, that we can learn from the fact that the Torah took the trouble to repeat all, to tell us and repeat all these cases, Pikodin and Gezel and Oshek and so forth, that we can learn from that the Yodosh is chayev to pay Keren in all cases. Or does the braisa mean it's logical they have to be paid? It's logical, in other words, we may not have a pasuk to show it, but we can show logically that the son should have to pay in all those cases. So what was it? What's the word? Yesh Talmud or Yesh Talmud? And Omale, and Rav Huna answers, Yesh Talmud Kamina. It means the braisa is saying Yesh Talmud. There is a way of learning from the pasuk, meaning Omuribuya Dekroy Avi. I'm saying based on the fact that the Torah is Marba, by mentioning all these cases, shows that the son is always responsible to pay the keren. So again, if the son is responsible to pay the keren, that can only be the father was moida afterwards that he had stolen. So fine, we can talk about whether there was a shavua or not, but there has to be at least be a hajar from the father in order to be even talking about these dinim.
So no, the son alone wants to clear his father's ganidim, and he says, yes, my father.
Yeah, but we have to ask, though, what are we talking about saying that he's required to pay the keren, and then we're talking about whether he is or isn't required to pay the chomesh. Wouldn't that require at least that the father was moida, that he stole, otherwise how do we know in the first place? Ela, my loy hoida. So we have to explain, when Rav Nachman said he wasn't moida, means loy hoida oviv v'hoida b'noi. Means the father was not moida, but the son is moida, and therefore he's making himself chayiv in the keren. But still, he's potter from chomesh. Well, the question is why? In that case, v'nechayiv b'noi chomesh ashvur didei. Why? The son himself is swearing that his father paid back, because we're talking about nishba huva obi. We're talking about a case. One of the cases where the son is potter from chomesh is where the father had sworn that he hadn't stolen it or that he repaid it, and the son also did. And we still say in the braisa that the son is potter from chomesh because it says asher gozel and he's not the one who stole. So why shouldn't he have to pay a chomesh for his? Why shouldn't he have to pay a chomesh for his own shvur that he himself swore falsely? Ami. So the answer is she'en gzela kayemes, because we're talking about where the thing that he stole no longer exists. Now later on, we're going to learn in the next parak that when that happens, and we're going to learn at the beginning of the next parak, a gozel machalos bonav, a person steals and gives that food, for example, to his children to eat, then the children are potter from paying back after their father dies. So there we're talking about over here that the gzela no longer exists. So therefore, so now if when he's kofer, then it's just he's being kofer. So now it's just a shvuas bitui. It's just he swore falsely, but it's not the kind of shvua that would be mechayiv mechomesh. That would only be a shvua on mammon, and here you don't have that. Here you don't have that kind of thing because they're potter from paying anyway. So the Gemara asks, "Eiv she'ena gzela kayemes after the keren nami lemeshalim." Well, then again, he's not chayiv even for the keren. So then. Because again, like we said, gozel machal is one of them, they're potter to pay.
Yeah.
Even for Karen, yeah. And the answer is, what's tzricha d'ikra achrayus? The answer is, where we can be talking about where the gazlan had karka, where the sons inherited it, and now there is achrayus. Now the Mishnah does go on to say over there that if the father left behind karka, then yes, the children do have to pay out of that, mipnei kvoid avihem, because of the covet of their father, because it shouldn't be that he left them zayim. Marsho actually asks on that, so Rashi brings that point, that the Chayov Lahasim, Nekvoy Davim, Marsho actually asks that when we get to that Gemara, when we get to the beginning of the next parak, we're going to talk about another, that Yavash Yesh Be'achrayus, there are two ways of explaining it in the Gemara over there. One explanation is it means that it's a Dover HaMasuyam, that there's the actual object, that there's an actual noticeable object that he bequeathed them. It could even be Metalplin. And that's still considered achrayus. So then, and when the Gemara says over there, a matter of, if we say that it means karka, it's not a matter of kvod avim, it's a matter of there's a shibud on karka. So why is Rashi saying over here, when he left them karka, it's because of kvod avim, when that seems to go against how the Gemara explains it over there. And so a couple of achronim talk about the posei shuas, talks about the pnei yeshua, talks about, and they give lomdisha answers that have to do with that the Gemara over here is going, that the Gemara over here, and Rashi's explanation over here is going according to a hava amina that we have over there, and it's true, based on the maskana of the Gemara over there, it would come out something different. Anyway, the point is that we're talking about there is achrayus. The question is still, so what if there was a chrayis nechosim, milval pei, it's still only a milval pei, there's no shtar for it, or milval pei to go to lemina yoshin, velemina lekuchas, and that kind of thing you don't collect from yoshim or from buyers. Now Rashi takes out this whole question and the answer that the Gemara is going to give, because Rashi has several questions on how the Gemara is even asking such a question. First of all, it says over there they have to repay because of kvod avim. So who cares whether they're required to pay or not? They may not be required because of the shibud, but they're required to pay because of kvod avim. And then Rashi points out a couple of other problems with it as well. So Rashi takes out the whole question and answer over here, and goes directly to the answer that Rav Huna Breda of Yeshua says on the next omen. Tosfos on the other hand shows how this question and answer can work, and other mafoshim also have it in the Gemara over here. So again, the question is that a milval peh you don't collect from the yoshim, so why would they be having to pay in the first place? So the answer, b'sha'omad b'din, because we're talking about where they actually went to Beis Din, and the Gazlan had actually come to Beis Din, and Beis Din had required him to pay, that's what he considered a milva b'shtar, and such a thing has to be paid by the Yoshin. Well, then he should have to pay the chomish as well. Because you don't pay a chomish when he's denying a claim that involves shibud of character. Because you don't, minat Torah, you don't swear on anything involving character. The Gemara learns it in Masechta Shavuos from Sukkim that the whole concept of shvur only applies to metaltlin. So now, when he's swearing falsely that his father didn't steal it, then, and we're talking about the shibud character, we're saying again, the gzela itself no longer exists. We're only talking about shibud because his father left him character. So in effect, he's swearing falsely about a claim involving character. For that kind of thing, there's no shvur min haTorah. So therefore, there's not going to be the kind of thing where because he did such a shvur, therefore he should be chayev, therefore that he should be chayev the chomish for that. This is because the father stole it, right. Rava gives a different answer. You can be talking about that the gzela did exist, but that bag of money that the father had left, which contained the gzela, was a pikodin that was left in somebody else's hands, and the son didn't know about it. So we don't have to say that the gzela was used up, like we said before. We're asking then, what about though the son swore falsely? Why shouldn't he be chayav a chomish for his own shvur? The answer is because he didn't know that this money still exists because it was mufked by somebody else. So now when he swore, d'chi ishtaba, b'kush ve'ishtaba. So now when he swore, it was, as far as he knew, a true shvur, d'holai hava yodah, because he didn't know better. As Rashi explains, based on the Gemara in Shavuos, when is a person chayav? A person can be chayev for a shvua, he can be chayev keren b'chomish, etc. He can be chayev b'chomish when he swears the shogeg or the mezid, but the shogeg would be, for example, he doesn't know his chayev korban for that, as the Gemara discusses over there. Here, where he actually didn't know the facts, we wouldn't call that a shvua, we wouldn't call that a shvua sheker, and therefore, because he didn't know better, it's called liboy onsoy, like his heart was onesim, because he didn't know better, and therefore he wouldn't be chayev b'chomish for such a thing. So that would be the case, and therefore, so the bottom line is that we have a few different ways of reconciling when did a Yoshim pay a Choymish, and where our Mishnah was saying that they never pay the Choymish. Our Mishnah was implying they do have to pay the Choymish because it's Mammon, so there are cases where they would have to pay it. Eventually, what we're saying over here is that when the Gzela still exists, and when the son had and when the father had sworn falsely about it, then the son is paying the chomish. But when not, then in the different cases that we just talked about, then in fact that would be what the Braisa is saying. Then in those cases, the son would be potter. The last Braisa from Tertus Koinin would be saying those are the cases where the son is potter from the chomish. So we're talking about he's potter from the chomish when when the gzela is not around anymore, he's only paying out of karka, so therefore there's only a shibud on karka, and you don't swear on karka, or where he didn't know the actual fact and he wasn't aware that the gzela still exists, and that's why he swore. So in those kinds of cases is where we're saying that those are the kinds of cases where we would be saying that he's potter from paying the chomish. So that would be another case, right. So the Rambam summarizes it as follows. He says that when he had to pay on his own, when he has to pay machmas ovid because of his father, then he's not paying chomish. So the Rambam summarizes his father stole or was chayev to other people money. The son knows about it, that he actually owes the money. The son was koifer and swore, but then he was moida. Then he pays only the keren because we're talking about when the gzela is not kayem, but if the gzela is still kayem, then he would pay the keren b'chomish. And then you have the various other cases that we find from the Gemara over here. If the father had sworn and been moida, then also the son is paying the chomish. On the other hand, if he wasn't moida and only the yodesh was moida, then he's paying only the keren. In all cases, it's potter from the Oshem, because the Oshem is definitely kapara, and as we said, ain't kapara l'mesim. So therefore, the kapara has to be done only when the person is alive. So the Yodesh is never going to do that. But as far as when the Yodesh pays the Chomish, it's going to depend on these various factors that we mentioned over here in the Gemara. Right now.